I said we're going to have to apologize for our stint of not doing podcasts for everyone.
Yeah.
Our 2 weeks, our 4 months off.
But, yeah, our podcast caught the coronavirus, so.
Yes, yeah, it was affected as well. Gang, welcome to the Amplified Podcast again. It's good to have everyone back. This is episode 7. And with episode 7, we have a wonderful episode entitled Be a Radiator, Not a Drain. And this is the first of what will turn into some interview podcasts that we'll do. We've had the luxury and pleasure to interview some great folks, and we'll continue to interview some great leaders. But today's podcast is with Larry Gennari, which was a wonderful interview. He's an attorney and founder of Project Entrepreneur, board member to the American Student Assistant, the ASA.
That is it. Yep.
Program. And just, it was a phenomenal interview. Chet, what was your take on the conversation with Larry?
Yeah, you know, Larry is such a great guy, and he's so well spoken, and it's so, he's very well read as well. He's just he's kind of an inspiration too, because I think he's one of the guys, and I think I may have even mentioned this in the interview, that he doesn't just talk about things that need to be done. He does them.
Yeah.
You know, so with Project Entrepreneur, for instance, we've had the opportunity to work with him, and I've worked directly with him a couple of times. And that's a great program that really matches a few needs. You know, it's a program that he created at Boston College Law School, where students, law students, learn the basics of kind of a boot camp of putting together a business, but also how to counsel clients and how to interact with clients. And the clients that they interact with are real life clients who will happen to be formerly incarcerated or at one time, you know, have a criminal record. And so, yeah. And a lot of those, you know, I think Larry's very passionate about that, that past that people have really puts them behind the eight ball, even, you know, that's a common term, but that that it's hard for them. And so he found a way to make this a class for up and coming lawyers to grasp onto and find an some joy in, as well as provide a real service to that community, to maybe, you know, instead of getting shot down with job interviews because you get a criminal record, to create your own business and to thrive doing something that you want to do. And then he matches all that with people who actually come in and see a pitch and potentially invest in people, and they've gotten investments. So it's pretty crazy, you know. It's such a great program.
We talk about idea building and collaborating and being open-minded to new ideas. I mean, to think of, you know, as an attorney and an adjunct professor at BC Law, correct?
Yeah.
It was very cool to hear his story about, you know, I have students, and then there's a social injustice or challenge for these former incarcerated citizens, and there's something I can do in my profession to help them. And so the yes and that goes back and forth in his mind, and, you know, I'm sure some of the folks that he worked with, and then he teaches that to his students of, hey, you're developing this career, this power with this. There's a lot of good that you can do. It's not closing the mind off to, I have to be an attorney and I care about, you know, conviction rate or whatever the case may be. It's, how can I use this skill set for a greater good? How can I expand that mindset?
Yeah, and he really uses this, and, you know, I don't know if he does it, you know, consciously or not, but kind of in everything he does, he comes from a position of authenticity and giving, you know, and from that he gets back, but not out of a selfish, you know, kind of need or whatever. It's more by giving back and by helping other people and helping connect other people. He's great at also connecting authors and innovators, and with ASA, with students, with trying to find ways to match their needs as they think about what they want to do, not so much with what they want to do with their life, but more what gives them passion and how to then explore that to create to create success, rather than asking a middle school student, what do you want to be when you grow up, you know,
yeah,
and just putting the pressure. So
it's such a good theme that came, you know, came through this interview. And so without further ado, we'll get to that interview. We hope you all enjoy it, the conversation with Larry Gennari. And we'll transition into that now.
Our guest today is Larry Gennari. Larry is a corporate and transactional lawyer and the co-founder of Gennari Aronson, a boutique law firm serving public and private companies in a variety of industries, as well as entrepreneurs, investors, executives, and board members, which we'll touch on a bit since he's great at connecting all those types of people together. Larry carries a Martindale Hubble AV preeminent rating. That sounds very impressive.
It's very impressive,
and,
yes.
And my favorite, he's been named a New England super lawyer since the inception of that publication. In recent editions, he's been ranked in the top 100. That makes me think that you're fighting crime one merger at a time. Larry is an adjunct professor at Boston College Law School, where he's also developed one of the law school's newest courses, Project Entrepreneur, a student-led business fundamentals bootcamp for entrepreneurs with criminal records, most of whom previously have been incarcerated. That's how I got to know him, and it's a great, inspiring program, and we'll be talking about that a little bit. And Larry and his firm also developed Authors and Innovators, an annual community-based business book and ideas event, and he's a board member at ASA, or American Student Assistance, whose mission is to help students know themselves, know their options, and make informed decisions to achieve their education and career goals. That's a lot, Larry. You do a lot.
like you, Chad. Well,
that's right.
I welcome this conversation. I'm delighted to be here. Thank you to you and Eric and the team for having me. This is fun.
Yeah. So let me start with Project Entrepreneur, because that's kind of how I know you the most, maybe. You know, again, I kind of mentioned in the intro that it's a program to help people that have criminal records, and most of whom have been incarcerated at some point, sort of create and launch their own business. I'm curious how that started. And, you know, we talk a lot about teams, and we work with a lot of entrepreneurs and startups as well. What have you found to be, so how did it start? And then what have you found to be, like, what has made a successful entrepreneur in that program?
You know, we work with so many entrepreneurs, and I've been doing this now 3 decades. And like Amplified, we really care about helping people be successful. And so that means helping people achieve their dreams. And this particular population has always been of great interest to me, in part because the more I read and the more I think about it and was thinking about it over these years, it struck me that the work I was doing, both regularly, in my day-to-day job, and also the coursework I was teaching at BC Law School, really needed to connect to that mission a bit more, meaning helping people be successful. And BC is such a great place for it, the general theme of being men and women for others. And I think the more we all think about the situation that we find ourselves in as a community, as a state, as a country, right, we know that we've got to solve some of these problems. And so I started to think through what I might be able to do as a lawyer and as a part-time professor. And it struck me that so many of the things and so many of the opportunities were around representing people in court and helping them get through these processes, all of which is incredibly important, but not exactly in my skill set. So I started to think more about these programs, started to interview people, and said, where on this continuum can I fit? Could it be people in prison? Could it be people just getting out? Or could it be people who have been out for a bit? And this is, as you know, Chuck, as we talked about it, just a huge, huge problem. We've got 20 million plus people in this country with a criminal record. A third of them are people of color. I mean, we have 1 in 3 African-American men with a criminal record. We have an increase of more than 8, maybe 9-fold in the number of women of color behind bars in the last 30, 40 years. And you combine that with what's going on in the criminal justice system, this 3 strikes law, which is getting a little bit better now with some of the recent federal legislation. But you've got 95% of cases that end in plea deals. And yep, you've got all of us reading this, of the 2 to 3 million people incarcerated every year. A small percentage of them remain behind bars and they end up getting exonerated. But for the folks who actually get through that system, they're struck with a life sentence. They're considered, and we've all seen the terminology, and I wrestle with it, ex-offender, ex-felon. And there are what are called collateral consequences. And as I tell my volunteers, my selfless volunteers like you who work at as mentors at Project Entrepreneur, you can look this up. There's a national directory of collateral consequences sponsored by the Justice Department that lists some 45,000 restrictions, prohibitions, and they cover everything, housing, political participation, occupation. And so folks who have a criminal record end up really behind the eight ball. And some of these are just crazy. I mean, in Maine, if you have either a felony or a misdemeanor, you cannot be an animal control officer. You have complications in doing this and becoming an interior designer in Wisconsin. In Massachusetts, you can't be an auctioneer or sheet metal worker unless you're going to jump through, or even a mobile barber, unless you jump through a whole bunch of hoops. So it struck me that having worked with so many entrepreneurs for so many years, one of the things you might be able to do, if it's of interest and your great joy meets the world's great need, you could be an entrepreneur. That really brought us to Project Entrepreneur, and we've had three sessions so far, and I've been so thrilled that you've helped us, you and Amplified have helped us with the yes and formulation that I know you bring to clients everywhere, to the program on negotiating at Harvard, all this great training, and you help our entrepreneurs in their pitch session as part of this boot camp that we create. So I think the entrepreneurs in Project Entrepreneur, to answer your good question, have a few things that you want from great entrepreneurs. There's a resiliency, a focus, an enthusiasm for an idea that they want to try. Most all of them have a criminal record. Most all of them have either finished parole or they're just finishing parole. And most all of them, I would say all of them, have suffered the collateral consequences of either being denied housing or a job because of their past. So the folks that we get into our program have done exactly what they've been told to do, serve the time, go through parole, complete the programs, and now this is their time to meet with people, to think about maybe this being something that they could do full time.
Yeah, so that's something that I really noticed today is the enthusiasm that all of the people I've worked with have had. And I like what you say about if your great joy meets the need that some of the folks really have. And I think one of the things you are great at doing, and I'd love to talk about it a little bit, is connecting people together. So, you know, yes, it's one thing to give them the fundamentals of kind of what it takes to put together business and how to structure that, how to structure a pitch. But I think one of the things I love about it is it doesn't end there. They actually do a pitch. They actually do a pitch, and you are able to get people in the room. Well, this last time, in rooms around a video screen. But in the room that, you know, this isn't just like a nice program to make them feel good. This is a real, people have gotten, you know, investment. They've gotten, I love one of the things that you kind of recommended to people as they thought about how to be an entrepreneur and how to build your team of, you know, being clear of what your ask is, you know. And I know there's one woman in particular I know from a couple sessions ago where she was wanted to put not a halfway house, but like a transitional home. Mm-hmm. And she needed a house. You know, she had this great idea and she wasn't necessarily looking just for money. She needed a house and she asked for it and she got it. I mean, that to me is incredible.
Yeah, it was incredible. And that's Stacey Borden, who's still she's an amazing entrepreneur, great story, and such a huge supporter now of Project Entrepreneur. But I think you're right. She is somebody who was able to connect with somebody in that audience. And as you know, Project Entrepreneur is it's really a dual course. So I'm helping law students understand the basics of counseling entrepreneurs. So we, as a law school course, we're going through different modules of things, intellectual property, employment law, all the things that you need to be able to understand the needs of an entrepreneur. And then on Monday nights, the entrepreneurs come in, and pre-pandemic, and I hope post-pandemic this fall, if all things go well, we actually have folks walk into a building and meet with outside entrepreneurs. Yep. And what I've been thrilled with, and you responded to this, and I know you feel the same way, Chet, is no matter how successful people are, there is this sense that they want to help, particularly if they feel they can help. And if you can connect their experience to entrepreneurs, they walk into the room, and in many cases, this is the first person with a criminal record that they've ever encountered. But they're not thinking about them that way. They're thinking yep. About them as either Chet, who wants to create a farm, you know, a food truck, or Larry, who wants to open up a laundromat. That's how they're connecting. And it's powerful stuff. And so they do a 10-week program where we go through, and it culminates, as you mentioned, in a session where they get to meet a group of invited guests, social entrepreneurs, CEOs, people who care about them. And so I do joke that it is a lot like Dolphin Tank, not so much Shark Tank. Everyone's there to help. And with your good help, the last few sessions, we've crystallized it and helped people focus their pitch so that the last slide is what I need. Yep. And so we tell them, look, this is not going to be the end. It's never the end for typical entrepreneurs, and it certainly won't be the end for you. And that's the work that I continue to be thinking about. What can we do to help these entrepreneurs who've spent a fair amount of time and energy thinking about this business, thinking about themselves in a different way?
Yeah.
Can we then take this? Because as even in the typical entrepreneurial world, not every venture takes off. But my hope is that the folks who get through this have learned to think about themselves in a different way. I heard from one Project Entrepreneur alum who actually went back and got a culinary certificate. So she's now going to take even more courses on how to build that out. It makes me feel good that the students and the outside mentors are helping to impact folks in a really positive way. And I can't wait to do it again.
Yeah, well, and you know, you mentioned that people want to help if they can, and I think that's great. That's something we espouse a lot, even in building teams, is I'll help you if I can. You know, if what you're asking me is something that takes advantage of me or I can't do, I have to say no. But looking for opportunities to say yes can really build a program, whether that's a program like Project Entrepreneur or even just a team. Is if I can always look for ways where I can say yes and help you, we're going to be stronger for it. That's one thing I noticed. So the other thing I think that I'd love to talk with you about, because we talk a lot about yes and, this concept of yes and, of how to listen and work off each other to make either innovations or to make connections or to build a better team. You know, we talk about it a lot for networking too, but we tend to think of it a little bit like, well, when I'm networking one-on-one, I can be a better networker if I have this yes and mentality of I'm listening to the other person, I'm building off of what they say, and we can sort of build a bond there and connect together. The one thing I think you've done really well, and I'd love to get your thoughts on it anyway, maybe you're sort of conscious of this, maybe it's subconscious, I don't know, is it strikes me that your yes and goes beyond that sometimes, in that I feel like you know how to connect people together, almost like the Malcolm Gladwell book, Tipping Point, like you're a connector, or I've seen you do that, where you've been like, I went to one of the dinners that you host, I think for the law firm, but it struck me there's a variety of people there, and you find a really nice way to understand who might connect well together. And so you provide that environment. I just thought it's a unique environment, but I'd love to hear you talk about the idea of like, how do you do that? I mean, do you do it consciously, or is it just something that's innate?
I think everybody has to do it in their own way. Chet, you have it. Eric has it. Your team at Amplified, I know, tries to bring this out. There's room for lots of different styles for people to do this. And I start from the premise that I tell all of my entrepreneurs, and frankly, I tell anyone, you can never have enough friends. And you really ought to start with the overall approach of wanting to help people be successful and immediately pivoting to that. And so I think about that as it's not an approach that everybody considers. And I frame it this way. If your approach to friendships, relationships, whether they're among colleagues or just people that you meet, is very much transactional. Who are they? I'm going to immediately look past you while I'm talking to see who else has come in the room. We all know those people.
Yep.
And they are drains. And so I say to my kids, be a radiator, not a drain. So be a radiator. Think about, I just got reacquainted with one of my favorite commencement speeches. It was one that the wonderful Howard Thurman gave at Spelman College back in the early 80s. And he talks about finding the sign of the genuine in yourself and then working hard to find the sign of the genuine in other people. So I think it starts with an approach that you really want to learn more about people because it makes you a richer, more thoughtful person. And you should be authentic. And that might mean, as you say, saying to someone, I'm not sure I can help you, but what you can do is talk to these two or three other people because I think they can. And so the dinners, my approach when I'm talking to people, even on LinkedIn, it's sort of, unless there's some sort of connection, unless there's some sort of genuine facility, I think it's harder to just connect to people as, hey, let's just do some business together. That works for some people on many levels, but just for me as a person, it never has.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I like what you're saying about the perspective too, because I think that's true of teams. And I've certainly been, you know, in corporate America positions where, you know, people are thinking, what can you do for me? That's kind of how they approach it, whether that's even on your team or your boss or whoever, rather than what can I do for you or what can we do together? And so I think it's an interesting, and I do think be a radiant and not a drain is a great way to think of it, because those drains, we've all sort of been around them. And I think someone who's established like you, it's good to hear, like, you're looking right past that person, right? Even though they may be very aspirational for their own needs, they don't realize what they're putting off is to people who really understand it. You're not being authentic, and I don't really want, you know, I'll go connect with someone else.
Yeah, and it's something I try to tell even my students. Get on LinkedIn and establish those contacts. Because we've all gotten those emails from people we haven't heard from in 7 years.
Yep.
Hey, attached is my CV. I'm looking for new opportunities. And you're thinking, I'd love to help you, but I don't know you.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what you've done. I don't have a sense of what you're interested in, how you want to bring value, how you can add value. So it's really hard for me to just forward that on and say, hey, Chet, here's someone I haven't talked to in 7 years. Maybe you'll be interested, because the relationships that you want to have, I think, at least that's the way kind of I try to order my life, you want to have a level of authenticity, honesty, candor, and have those bring you joy.
Yeah. Business. Well, it seems like that's what you're doing with the American Student Assistance as well. I mean, I know you're a board member there, but it strikes me that that seems to be a recurring theme sort of in your life of having people know themselves, know what their options are, and make informed decisions to improve.
Yeah. ASA is a great story. Former Student Loan Guarantor, and for folks who haven't looked at it, it's asa.org, and now really morphing into this innovative nonprofit at a national level that is going to help those middle school kids at a time where I think in our country where we really need it.
I totally agree. It's funny because I do a lot of, you know, just so I have kids that are middle school age, and I do a lot of improv stuff because I think that's the age right there where they start really forming some of their values and some of their self-worth as well, you know. And it's an awkward time sometimes for some of them. So I didn't mean to cut you off, but I think because when I first heard ASA, I thought, oh, they're probably helping people who are like college age, kind of figure either pay for college or, you know. And then I realized, like, oh, this starts even earlier. How interesting, and I think how effective.
You captured it perfectly, because that's what we were doing, helping access and helping people get to college and realizing over time, whoa, this starts earlier.
Yeah.
And I just finished Adam Grant's book, Think Again, which is phenomenal, by the way. And he says, please, please, please stop asking those middle school kids, what do you want to be when you grow up? Stop. Yeah. Just
right.
Stop. talk about the kind of things that get them excited. And so to me, having them explore that at a time where, you know, only a third of Americans are going to college, and that's declining. I mean, the gulf between the people who can actually afford it and the people who can't. I mean, goodness, read Scott Galloway's book, Post-Corona, what he thinks about higher ed. And we're getting to a point where we need to recognize people's contributions at all levels. Citing another book, Michael Sandel's book, The Tyranny of Merit, which I just loved, talks about really trying to find a way to recognize people's contributions and recognize this concept of not just economic justice, but contributive justice. And boy, that so resonates with me, and it cuts across so much of what we're doing. When I think about even the folks you and I are helping in Project Entrepreneur, I mean, these kids are a collateral consequence of the, at any given time, you've got 2 to 3 million people in prison. 50% of them, I think was a stat I saw, have minor children, kids.
Yeah.
We've got somewhere between 50 and 70,000 kids incarcerated a year in juvie centers and longer term facilities, including drug treatment. I mean, these are the folks who are going to just be, they're going to be thrown away. They're going to be forgotten. And so my hope is that a set of programs that we can create at ASA is going to help so many kids figure out how they fit into contributing to community. Because the one thing that I think we're all focused on is the fraying of that community, which is the foundation of democracy. And the more that we can do, instead of just folding our arms and saying, well, let's just, stimulus checks are great in the short term, but we've got to think about contributive justice in the longer term.
Yeah.
And that means helping teams be successful. That means helping people who can't find a job that they care about build their own. Because as you and I both know, that transitional home, that food truck, that laundromat will then employ that person, their family, other people. It becomes a gathering place in the community among others. And that those are the building blocks where we're sort of starting. We're not going to save the world, but boy, if you can just help connect a few places and support a few neighborhoods, then we're at least doing our part.
Well, and that's what I love about what you do. I mean, and not to overly be sappy about it, but I love that you aren't just complaining about the state of the world or that these things are going on. You're actually doing something. Oh, I know. But as opposed to a lot of people, you're actually doing something about it. I mean, both through ASA and through Project Entrepreneur and kind of through everything you do. I really admire that, you know, if change is going to happen, people have to get in the fray and do it, you know, and I think you're doing that. So I appreciate you for all of that you do.
You're kind to say it. I think being a lawyer is a privilege, as I tell my students all the time. And we have to think about ourselves as citizen lawyers, as people who actually are meant to. We are officers of the court, but to me, we are stewards of community as well. I mean, we're trying to help people solve problems and become more productive in their day-to-day lives, no matter what kind of law we're practicing. And that's pretty important for people, particularly young people who are just starting the profession, to hear at a time where so many of our colleagues, regardless of what they're doing, are embittered or they're not happy and the like. And I can still say after 3+ decades, this is an amazing privilege to be a lawyer. And there's so much that you can do with it. That we should be in some way.
Well, thanks so much. I'm going to actually just ask one final question because we're certainly up against it a little bit. And that is just because in the news recently, I think it was even just yesterday, Vincent Rougeau, the dean of the law school at Boston College, where you are an adjunct professor, is leaving to go. It was a great opportunity for him. He's going to go to head up Holy Cross. Because you're in a leadership position as well in a lot of what you do, what would your advice be to whoever the new person is coming in to sort of replace that person? How would a leader, because I think this happens a lot to people, I have to come in and work with people who are already pretty successful. How do I do that?
Wow. I probably tell them to call Amplified because they're going to need some help on culture, no matter what.
Well, we're always willing to help.
I would say first and foremost, Vince is a really thoughtful, talented leader. And Holy Cross's gain, huge gain, is BC Law's loss. He will be greatly missed. I think for the next leader, whether they're a dean at a law school or an incoming college president, I think the greatest challenge is going to be to listen and to attentively and intentionally listen, because there's a lot of push and pull about both internally about the direction of legal education and also externally just the role of lawyers generally. And so I would hope that the incoming dean, that she or he would really think about how they can advocate, not just at a local level, but what is it that the lawyer of the future should be thinking about and doing, and what should animate their reason for wanting to be a lawyer? Because they have changed. Those have changed considerably. Right. Since when I started my career 30 years ago at Ropes and Gray, the idea was you'd go to a large firm, get great training, and if it all worked out, you would stay there until you retired. And those days, I think, are over, both in the legal profession, but also for so many others. And I think part of the reason is that the organizations don't necessarily grow as well as the people in them, or as fast as the people in them. So how do you as a law school help prepare students so that when they get out there and end up perhaps going to one of those great big firms for a terrific training and the like, help answer the question 2 or 3 years later, the thought balloon over their heads, and I'm sure you had this, I had this, is this all there is? And so you really got to help the students think about themselves in a broader way and connect them to the larger community. And that will be a challenge for, and I know Vince was working very hard on that, and he will do it at Holy Cross, but that's going to be a real challenge for the next leader. It's an exciting challenge, but it will be a real front and center challenge from day one.
Well, thank you again so much for taking the time to speak with us. And definitely all our listeners, check out ASA.org. It's a great, great organization. Thanks so much for your time. And I'm sure I'll be seeing you for the next Project Entrepreneur.
And soon enough, once we're vaccinated, for one of our terrific dinners. So
exactly.
Thank you, Seth. This is fun.
So there was our interview with Larry Gennari. Larry, we really appreciate the time that you gave us. At the end of the conversation, Larry also recommended a few different reads to us. So if you found his approach, his mindset, and knowledge very valuable, a few books he recommended. One, The Tyranny of Merit by Michael Sandel. Faith After Doubt by Brian McLaren. And Think Again by Adam Grant. Those were three reads that he highly recommended. It was really interesting about his philosophy on, you know, great joy meeting great need. And he sees that in a lot of entrepreneurs. And then the sense of genuineness, finding the genuine in yourself and the genuine in other people. But we really appreciate it. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. We'll have more interviews to come. This is Eric.
I'm Chet.
And we will see you guys on our next podcast. If you're interested, check out amplifiedteam.com. or any of our social media channels, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, @AmplifiedTeam for our handle. And we will see you on the next one.